Thomas Jefferson wanted on his tomb, and I hope you can see it here. Should be able to read that, I guess. Here was buried Thomas Jefferson, author of the Declaration of Independence, of the Statute of Virginia for Religious Liberty, and father of the University of Virginia. And then down a little bit lower, you see his birth and death, April 2nd, 1743 O.S., and then died July 4th, 1826. By the way, John Adams, his closest friend, if not best friend, also died on July 4th, 1826. 50 years to the day after the Declaration. Isn't that interesting? So what is that OS? Mansfield, in his book that I'm using, says this. The letter OS, appearing after dates, stand for Old Style. In 1752, the Julian or Old Style calendar was replaced in England and her colonies by the Gregorian or New Style calendar, which is still in use today. That's the one we're using. In other words, it hasn't always been the calendar that we're using. This is something that's relatively new when you look at history. This added 11 days to the date to bring the calendar year into step with the astronomical year. Thomas Jefferson's birthday then, which was April 2nd under the old style calendar, is now celebrated on April 13th. But when I read what he wanted on his tombstone, I think, well, pardon me, Mr. Jefferson, but were you not also governor of Virginia, minister or ambassador to France, a member of Congress, secretary of state, vice president, and there was something else? Oh, yeah, president of the United States of America. Isn't that interesting? He excluded all that. But the three things he wanted was that he wrote the Declaration, that he wrote the Statute of Virginia for Religious Freedom, and that he was the father of the University of Virginia. He's the one that started that university, among many other things that he did. I mean, he was also an architect. When I was in Virginia a few years ago, and Brother Tyler Young, who had invited me to speak out there, took me to the Virginia capital, Richmond, and saw the buildings that are still in use today that Jefferson designed. The Capitol building, for example. Amazing. An amazing man. But he wanted to be known as someone who worked for, who strove for, who fought for religious freedom. And it's interesting because a lot of people see him as being antagonistic towards religion, and maybe he knew that. And that's why he wanted that on his tombstone, even more than being president of the United States of America. I would guess that most Americans do not remember him for those three things, or the other things that I've mentioned, except for maybe that he was president. But most people remember him for a phrase that he coined, although they don't know the context of it, and although its meaning has been completely reversed from what he meant, and that is, wall of separation between church and state. Church and state. He wrote those words to a Baptist association, assuring them that he would not interfere in their affairs. They had written to him to congratulate him on becoming president, but there were some things about him that they weren't sure about. So they wrote to him. And he let them know in his letter that the Constitution, in particular, the Bill of Rights, the First Amendment, forbade him from interfering in their affairs at all. Even if he wanted to, he couldn't, because there's this wall of separation that keeps the government from getting into a church's affairs or taking a church and making it the national church or whatever. The government was just not allowed to do that. So in other words, he wrote it meaning that the government needed to stay out of the church's business, not that the church should be silenced in public, not that the church can't have any say in the government. And you'll wait till you see what I give you tonight. you may be very amazed by what I show you. I am when I read it, and even though I'm familiar with it, I'm still amazed. I'm like, is this really true? And it is. But what's interesting is that his phrase is used to silence the church, to silence God, to silence the Bible. Like I mentioned to you the very first lesson that I gave in this series, where a juror prayed, and I don't know when the juror prayed, but the juror told that to the other jurors, and that juror was dismissed. I think Thomas Jefferson, as well as all of our founding fathers, every single one of them, would just be infuriated at such a thing. In that 1947 Supreme Court case, to which I made reference 2 weeks ago, they virtually made Jefferson's words the law of the land. When university professors, national journalists on television, politicians, judges, public school staff, and others read the First Amendment, they read it, what they see is Jefferson's terminology. They don't see the terminology that's in the Constitution. They're interpreting that as they read it, and they're saying the church is supposed to be quiet, the church is supposed to be out of here, America is supposed to be a secular state. And nothing could be further from the truth. A private letter of a president to a group has become the law of the land. And in my opinion, this has become the major, if not the major, cause of silencing religion in America more than anything else. So what I want to do, and I've done this with some of you before, who attended the Friday night class that I had on the American Heritage series, but I want to do it again, so I hope it doesn't seem tedious to you. But I want us to read the letter that the Danbury Baptist Association wrote to him, and then his response to them. And of course, it's going to be in the language of, you know, a couple hundred years ago, but I think you'll still be able to understand what's going on. So Ori and Adam, this is what I need you right now. I need you guys. Remember I talked to you beforehand? Come on up here. And Ori, why don't you go on that side of the building over there? And make sure everyone gets one. Oh, put his mask on, okay? Being well trained. So give them to your grandma right here and your sisters too if they want one. Oh, you know what? I need one, Adam. Okay, you just put them on that back pew back there, Ori. Right there in front of you. Yeah, right there, yeah. Okay, so did everyone get one who wants one? I just got one more person to get one. All right, thank you, boys. Okay, so let's read this. First, from the Danbury Baptists. The address of the Danbury Baptist Association in the state of Connecticut, assembled October 7th, 1801, to Thomas Jefferson, President of the United States of America. Sir, among the many millions in America and Europe who rejoice in your election to office, we embrace the first opportunity which we have enjoyed in our collective capacity since your inauguration to express our great satisfaction in your appointment to the chief magistracy in the United States. And though the mode of expression may be less courtly and pompous than what many others clothe their addresses with, we beg you, sir, to believe that none is more sincere. So in other words, we may not be sounding with all the proper language like how we should, and you can see where they like left off D on United and so on, but says we're very sincere in what we have to say. Our sentiments are uniformly on the side of religious liberty, that religion is at all times and places a matter between God and individuals, and that no man ought to suffer a name, person, or effects on account of his religious opinions, and that the legitimate power of civil government extends no further than to punish the man who works ill to his neighbor. But, sir, our constitution of government is not specific. Our ancient charter, together with the laws made coincident therewith, were adapted as the basis of our government at the time of our revolution. And such has been our laws and usages, and still are, so that religion is considered as the first object of legislation. And therefore, what religious privileges we enjoy as a minor part of the state, we enjoy as favors granted and not as inalienable rights. And these favors we receive at the expense of such degrading acknowledgments as are inconsistent with the rights of freemen. It is not to be wondered at, therefore, if those who seek after power and gain under the pretense of government and religion should reproach their fellow men, or should reproach their chief magistrate, as an enemy of religion, law, and good order, because he will not, dares not, assume the prerogative of Jehovah and make laws to govern the kingdom of Christ. So I know that's a lot of verbiage, and we wouldn't have said it in so many words, but especially at the very end there, you can see what their concern is, that someone in your position not make laws for the kingdom of Christ. Sir, we are sensible that the President of the United States is not the national legislator, and also sensible that the national government cannot destroy the laws of each state. But our hopes are strong that the sentiment of our beloved President, which have had such genial effect already, like the radiant beams of the sun, will shine and prevail through all these states and all the world until hierarchy and tyranny be destroyed from the earth. Sir, when we reflect on your past services and see a glow of philanthropy and goodwill shining forth in a course of more than 30 years, we have reason to believe that America's God has raised you up to fill the chair of state out of that goodwill which he bears to the millions which you preside over. So I think they're doing a good thing here. They're not ripping him up. They sense that there may be a potential conflict. And so they're not just... Sometimes I see what people say to government, and I think, why would anyone in government ever listen to what that person has to say? But they're honoring him, as they should. He's the President of the United States, even if they didn't agree or whatever. So I think we can learn from these people. Anyways, they continued, may God strengthen you for the arduous task which Providence and the voice of the people have called you to sustain and support you and your administration against all the predetermined opposition of those who wish to rise to wealth and importance on the poverty and subjection of the people. And may the Lord preserve you safe from every evil and bring you at last to his heavenly kingdom through Jesus Christ, our glorious mediator, signed in behalf of the association. Then you see those three names there. So here's his reply, writing to Nehemiah Dodge, Ephraim Robbins, and Stephen Nelson, January 1st. So it took him a couple of months to respond, because they wrote on October 7th, a few months later, he's finally writing back. Well, he's President of the United States. He's just become President. I'm sure he had a lot of matters that needed to be addressed, that he needed to do. So anyways, he finally addressed them on January 1st, 1802. Gentlemen, the affectionate sentiment of esteem and approbation which you are so good as to express towards me on behalf of the Danbury Baptist Association give me the highest satisfaction. My duties dictate a faithful and zealous pursuit of the interests of my constituents, and in proportion as they are persuaded of my fidelity to those duties, the discharge of them becomes more and more pleasing. Because if everyone's like you, you're going to make my job easy. Believing with you that religion is a matter which lies solely between man and his God, that he owes account to none other for his faith or his worship, that the legislative powers of government reach actions only and not opinions, I contemplate with sovereign reverence That act of the whole American people, which declared that their legislator would make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. So he's quoting the First Amendment. Thus building a wall of separation between church and state. Adhering to this expression of the supreme will of the nation in behalf of the rights of conscience, I shall see with sincere satisfaction the progress of those sentiments which tend to restore to man all his natural rights, convinced he has no natural right in opposition to his social duties. I reciprocate your kind prayers for the protection and blessing of the common Father and Creator of man, tender you for yourselves and your religious association assurances of my high esteem, or respect and esteem. Okay, so I'd encourage you to read that again. I know it's kind of wordy and stuff, and we would have said it differently, but he picked up on what they were saying. They're wondering if I am going to interfere in their affairs. And he said, no. The will of the American people is the First Amendment. That's a wall that keeps me from getting into your affairs. And like I've already said, that has now been so twisted to mean the government is supposed to be antagonistic toward religion, and that our founding fathers intended America to be a secularistic state. And that's not true at all, but wait till I give you some more stuff here. Jefferson was like all of us. He grew, he abandoned some beliefs, and in some of his old beliefs he grew even stronger. And one of his stronger beliefs was that government should support religion, not silence religion. And here's why this is important. For a time, you can see early in his career that Thomas Jefferson's beliefs were not all in line with biblical thinking. He didn't think very much of established religions. He thought that religion was good for peace and order, but that was about it. He saw Jesus merely as a great moral teacher, and he thought that the Bible needed editing. But in time, he abandoned those ideas and took on very strong biblical beliefs. In 1803, Stephen Mansfield says this. In 1803, Jefferson recommended to Congress the passage of a treaty that provided a stipend of $100 annually to support a Catholic priest in ministering to the Kaskaskia Indians. What? 2 years later, he's authorizing or recommending Congress to pay this Catholic priest $100 annually so that he can minister to a certain group of Indians. 17 similar treaties were enacted with his endorsement for the Waino Indians and other tribes in 1806 and the Cherokee in 1807. Another act that originated in 1787 ordained special lands for the sole use of Christian Indians and reserved land for the Moravian brethren for civilizing the Indians and promoting Christianity. When this act was renewed, it bore the title An Act Regulating the Grants of Land Appropriated for Military Services and for the Society of the United Brethren for Propagating the Gospel Among the Heathen. 3 times during his administration, Congress extended this act and Jefferson signed it into law. Not once did he ever or even consider vetoing it on the basis that it violated the First Amendment or his own wall of separation metaphor. To me, that's absolutely fascinating. So he grew even stronger in these beliefs. He began proclaiming that he was a Christian, which he never had done before. Then he started doing something that he had never done before. He started attending worship services. And someone says, okay, that's nice, that's no big deal. Well, it may not sound like a big deal until you hear where he attended these services. It wasn't just at the local community church. Now listen carefully to this next sentence. He attended worship services in the House of Representatives. Thomas Jefferson, who was supposed to be against religion, people tell us today, and who believed in a secular state, he went to worship services in the House of Representatives, but what also amazes me is not just that he went there, but that there were worship services in the House of Representatives, a federal building in Washington. Amazing. And yet, he didn't see it as a violation of the First Amendment, and he didn't see it as a violation of his commentary on the First Amendment. And worship services started being held, taking place in Washington before the government was moved to Washington in 1800. In 1795, a Boston newspaper reported this. City of Washington, June 19th. It is with much pleasure that we discover the rising consequence of our infant city. Public worship is now regularly administered at the Capitol every Sunday morning at 11 o'clock by the Reverend Mr. Ralph. And such services continued until the year 1866. So for around 70 years, at the beginning of our status as a nation, there were church services in a federal building. And not just any federal building, but the House of Representatives. Can you believe that? And Jefferson was part of that. There was no objection of which I am familiar. I've never seen any objection to this. Our founding fathers, therefore, understood how doing such did not constitute a national church, and that everyone has to be a member of it, and you have to pay contributions to it through your taxes or anything like this. Now, get this further. Do you know when the first time was that Jefferson attended church services in the House of Representatives? 2 days after he wrote that letter that we just read to the Danbury Baptist Association. Did he forget what he wrote to them or something? I don't think so at all. Because he understood it differently than the way we do today. After all, he's the one who wrote it. He did not see it as keeping the church away from the government. In fact, he would say that the government needs the church. We're supposed to be the moral conscience of the nation as well as of the government. Maybe that's why they want us to be quiet. I hadn't really put that all together before. But people still have twisted his phrase to mean that there should actually be laws against mentioning religion. That's like saying John 3:16, for God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son, that whoever believes in him should not perish, to mean that God actually hates the world. And I think I could see some people saying that. Well, that's for the people who believe in him. What about for the people who don't believe in him? Well, they're going to perish, therefore God hates the world. But I hope you know that that's not a proper way to reason at all. It's saying God loves the whole world because he wants everyone to become a believer and he wants everyone to have everlasting life. So sometimes someone can say this, and it's not just that people pervert it a little bit so that it's off, but they will completely say, no, he actually meant it in the exact opposite direction. And that's what I think they've done with President Thomas Jefferson. He continued to worship with that church in the House of Representatives for the next 7 years. Therefore, his wall of separation figure of speech could not have meant that government cannot support religion. Listen to this. An early Washington insider reported that Jefferson, during his whole administration, was a regular attendant. The seat he chose the first day Sabbath, meaning Sunday, so the first time he was there, and the adjoining one, so there's two seats, which his private secretary occupied, were ever afterwards, by the courtesy of the congregation, left for him. That's where Thomas Jefferson sits, and his secretary sits there, and so no one sat there because that's for him. And he didn't ask for it. That was their way of honoring him. Amazing. He became a fixture at the meetings and gained a reputation for attending even through violent weather, which can get pretty bad in Washington, D.C. John Quincy Adams was a senator during those days, and he also attended there. And the place was filled with people. In 1857, the attendance was 2,000. Well, today we'd call that a mega church. There was a mega church in a federal building of the United States of America. Wow, magnificent. Jefferson also approved of churches meeting in the War Office and in the Treasury Building. So that wasn't the only place. And during those days, a church even began meeting in the chambers of the Supreme Court. And it was the Supreme Court in 1947 that says no. Jefferson doesn't even know his own words. That's really what they said. So one time as Jefferson was walking to church services, Ethan Allen, you've probably heard that name. He was a farmer, businessman, land speculator, philosopher, writer, lay theologian, American Revolutionary War patriot, politician, and one of the founders of Vermont. He saw Jefferson walking one time, and here's what the exchange was. "Which way are you walking, Mr. Jefferson?" Allen asked. "To church, sir." "You going to church, Mr. J? You do not believe a word in it." "Sir," said Mr. Jefferson, "no nation has ever yet existed or been governed without religion, nor can be. The Christian religion is the best religion that has been given to man, and I, as chief magistrate of this nation, am bound to give it the sanction of my example." "Good morning, sir." Man, I'd love to have a modern president speak like that, wouldn't you? Wow. But in spite of all that evidence, people still see Jefferson as antagonistic toward religion. I hope that you've been educated tonight concerning this truth about our nation. And let us learn to see how Christianity helped to form the United States of America, and that government has been set up by our Constitution and by the Bill of Rights and all the other amendments to support, that it's supposed to support religion and encourage it, maybe would be the better word. Jefferson thought of his example. It's not that he was Thomas Jefferson, but I'm the President of the United States. I need to set an example for the people in this nation. And I think he was right. Should we not think in the same way of our example as Christians? I mean, we are the sons and daughters, we are the children of Almighty God on the earth. We are the representatives of Jesus Christ on this earth, brethren. And of course, I know I'm speaking to the choir tonight. That's why you're here tonight, because you believe in that very point, that yes, I should be here, I should be setting an example. But what I do want to tell you, whether you're aware of this or not, I don't know, but there are new Christians who watch you, and there are young people who watch you. Do not back down on your example. Don't get discouraged. Maybe sometimes you may think, I just don't know if it's worth going, or you might find some reason not to attend the worship services. I mean, if you're sick, obviously there's times when you have to be away, but your example is powerful. You know, Paul told Timothy, 1 Timothy 4:12, "Let no one despise your youth, but be an example to the believers in word, in conduct, in love, in spirit, in faith, in purity." In 1 Peter 2:11 and 12, Peter told us, "Beloved, I beg you as sojourners and pilgrims, abstain from fleshly lust which war against the soul, having your conduct honorable among the Gentiles, that when they speak against you as evildoers, they may, by your good works," one would be coming to worship services, "which they observe, glorify God in the day of visitation." Well, the reason I'm mentioning that is because, again, I know you're probably thinking, "Don, you should have said this at the Sunday morning service." Okay, true. And in fact, you ought to send this letter to people who don't come very much at all. Okay, I agree with you. But I just want you to know that your example of being here whenever the church meets has already affected people. I've already baptized people into Christ here who have told me about your example. Now, I didn't come back later and say to you specifically, you know, to various individuals or to the church, you know, this person is your new brother or sister in Christ now because of your example. But that's exactly what has happened. There are people who are now saved on their way to heaven, saved from hellfire, because they saw your example and it inspired them. And they wanted what you have. And there are Christians today who grew up in the church. And they remember old brother so-and-so, old sister so-and-so, and how they were always there. And that meant the world to them. And they want to be like you. I've been told things along those lines. So I want to just encourage you to keep doing what you're doing tonight. I know there's more to Christianity than just this. And, you know, well aware of that. But, again, don't back down. Remain steadfast. And you're going to bless, continue to bless people, and you may not even be aware of it. If we can help you tonight, if you need some prayers or anything else, come forward now as we stand and sing.